the bathroom to brush the scent from his breath. If Elena found out he'd been breaking into the good stuff without her, there'd be hell to pay. "Hey, baby," he said as she shambled into the kitchen. Her hair was in disarray and her jaw set a little forward. "You couldn't make some fucking coffee," she replied. "I feel like shit." "You should stay home," he said. "Take a day off." "It's Sunday, asshole." "Sit," Ramon said, gesturing to the cheap plastic and chitin chair at her kitchen table. "I'll make you some food, eh?" She managed a smile at that, her black mood thinning a little. Ramon surveyed the contents of her pantry carefully, consulting the freshness readouts on the sides of the cans and boxes, and having a little trouble with them. He might have had a little too much of the whiskey. He just needed to seem sober long enough for a little of the alcohol to burn off. He got a can of black beans, a couple of tortillas, some eggs from the back of the refrigerator, and a hunk of cheese. A little green chili, and it would be huevos rancheros. It was a good meal because with a little practice it could be made in a single pan. Ramon had enough practice cooking it in his van that he could probably do it even a little drunk. "So you're going to get a job in town now?" Elena asked. "No," Ramon said. The beans dropped from their can to one side of the heating skillet, hissing and popping as the juice started to boil. He reached for the eggs. "I figure I'll go talk to Griego about renting a van. I figure if I promise him a part of the cut, it'll only take me 3 or 4 good runs to pay the thing off."
3 or 4 good runs," Elena said, as if he'd said shit gold and piss rose water. "When was the last time you had 3 or 4 good runs in a row? Did you ever?"
"I got some ideas," Ramon said, realizing as he did so that it was true. There was the struggling precursor of a plan at the back of his head. Maybe it had been there since the first time he'd had the dream of the Enya and understood what Manek and its people were fleeing. He smiled to himself. He knew what he was going to do.
"You should get a real job," Elena said. "Something steady."
"I don't need that. I'm a good prospector."
Elena raised her hand like a schoolgirl asking to speak.
"Last time you went out, you came back 3/4 dead without any of your shit."
"It was bad luck. It won't happen again."
"Oh, you control luck now, eh?"
"It's the European," Ramon said, flipping the eggs. "He was after my ass. It was like a curse. It's gonna be fine next time."
"Sounds like you found God out there," Elena said,
and then paused. When she spoke again, her voice was less surly.
"Did you find God, mi hijo?"
"No," Ramon said. He crumbled a handful of cheese over the beans, then slid the tortillas onto plates. Coffee. He needed to heat up some water. He knew he'd forgotten something.
"I figured some other stuff out, though."
"Like what?" Elena asked. Ramon was silent as he served up the eggs, spooned the beans and cheese over the top, got the coffee brewing. He could feel her gaze on him, neither accusing nor sympathetic. He wondered what was going on behind her eyes, what the world meant to her. She was more predictable, more familiar, but in some ways she'd always been as alien to him as Manek. He didn't trust her because he wasn't stupid, and yet there was something, some other impulse that prompted him to speak.
"Like why I killed the European in the first place," he said.
He explained to her as best he could, his memory still a thing of shadows and dream, something he remembered knowing more than something he had participated in firsthand, a reconstruction. They'd been drunk, yes. Things got out of hand, yes. But it had happened for a reason. Ramon walked through it all again. He could explain what the cop had said, the woman, the laughter. He could guess from what his twin had and hadn't said, from what he knew about himself, about the sense of the whole bar turning against the European, and Ramon himself on the top of the swell. He could tell with certainty what it had been like when, in the alleyway, they had all pulled back.
all the people who'd been shouting him on, the sense of loss and betrayal. He'd been what they wanted him to be, and then they dropped him for it. The European, the girl, the laughter. It hadn't really been about them at all. Ramon hadn't killed the man because the fucker needed to die, or because the woman was one of their own and the man an outsider, or to protect her from getting mauled. Ramon had done it so that the other people in the bar would think well of him. He'd killed out of a need to be part of something. Ramon shook his head, smiling. Elena hadn't touched her food. The coffee was warm, the beans cold as the table. Her eyes were locked on his, her expression unreadable. Ramon shrugged, waiting for her to speak.
"You are fighting over a fucking woman?" Elena breathed.
"No," Ramon said. "It wasn't like that. There was this lady he was with, but..."
"And you didn't like how he was treating her. So you picked a fight. You drunk, selfish son of a bitch. What the fuck was wrong with the woman you had waiting for you here? You had to go risk getting your ass killed for some puta because of what?"
Ramon felt the rage swelling up in his breast. He told her. He'd bared his soul to Elena, and all she could do was turn it into some kind of bullshit, jealous fight. He'd been really talking to her, talking like real lovers are supposed to. And this was what he got for it. Another fucking bunch of accusations. Another load of shit. His face flushed. His fists clenched. But then, it faded. The bottom dropping out of the rage. Elena threw her plate at him, the food splattering against the wall, immediately gathering a swarm of skitterlings. Ramon watched it like it was all happening someplace else, to someone else. He'd known, hadn't he? He'd known she wouldn't be able to hear him. That even if he explained himself the best way he could, she wouldn't understand. "If lions could speak," he remembered Ibrahim saying. "It's not happening," Ramon said, his voice gentle and matter-of-fact. His calm seemed to startle Elena out of her rage. He saw her trying to get it back and rose to his feet. "You're not a bad person, Elena. You're a little crazy, but I don't see how anyone lives in this fucking city all the time without getting a little crazy. But this..." He gestured at the food dripping down the wall, Elena's small hands curled tightly into fists, the apartment. He gestured at their life together. "This isn't going to happen anymore," he said. Elena tried. She baited him. She screamed. She shouted obscenities at him and taunted him about his sexual inadequacies, all the things she had done before, the familiar, habitual sickness. When it was clear that he was going to leave, she wept, and then grew quiet as if she were thinking through a puzzle. She barely raised her head as he closed the door behind him. An hour later, Ramon was walking down the riverside, listening to the music coming off the boats. He had a satchel packed with two changes of clothes, a toothbrush, a few documents that he'd left at her apartment, everything he owned. The sun shone on the water, and the air was cool with the first bite of autumn. It was like being born again. He had nothing, and yet he couldn't stop smiling. And somewhere nearby, in one of the small apartments with their weedy courtyards and leaking roofs, Liana was making her life. She wouldn't be that hard to find, and he was a free man. First, though, there was Manuel Griego and the problem of the van. There was a future to create, and now he had a plan to do it. "Ramon Espejo!" Ramon stopped, looking back over his shoulder. The man looked familiar, but it took the two uniformed brutes coming from the van behind him to give the face and voice context. The man from the constabulary. The cop. Ramon considered running. It was only a few yards to the river. He could dive in before they caught him. But then they could also get boats out and haul him up like the world's ugliest fish. Ramon raised his chin in greeting. "You're that cop," Ramon said. His mind was racing. Elena. It had to be Elena. She called the cops and passed on all he told her about the European.
Johnny Joe Cardenas had just gotten his prayers answered.
Ramon Espejo, I have a warrant from the governor for your detainment for questioning. You can come with us of your own free will, or I can put you in restraints any way you want.
There was a glitter in the cop's eye, a lilt in his voice. He was having a very good day.
I didn't do anything, Ramon said.
You aren't accused, Señor Espejo. We just need to talk to you about something.
The station house was one of the oldest in Diego Town, grown when the first colonists had arrived, and not updated since. Where the chitin superstructure showed, it had become gray with time. The plaster and paint had been freshened for the Enya, but the building still seemed old and sad and brooding, ominous. The interrogation room wasn't entirely unfamiliar territory for Ramon. Dirty white tiles lined the walls, marred by unidentifiable stains and threatening dents and cracks. A long table set just a little too high. A metal chair bolted to the floor and set just a little too low, so you felt like a kid. The light was too bright and blued to make anyone look dead. The air was stale and close and still as the grave. Ramon felt like he'd been breathing the same four lungfuls since he'd entered. There was no clock, no window, nothing to tell him how far the hours had stretched. His only company had been the uniformed guard who told him he couldn't smoke, and the old flat black surveillance camera set into the wall at the corner of the ceiling. The design was intended to make a man feel small, insignificant, and doomed. It worked pretty well, and Ramon found his resentment of it fueling his anger. Anger at Elena and the constabulary, the European and the alien hive and his dead twin. It wasn't rational. It wasn't even coherent. But it was what he had to carry him through this, and so he cultivated it. He didn't have money for a lawyer. There would be no one to defend him besides himself. And what defense could he give? That he was so drunk he didn't remember doing it? Elena would be more than happy to flirt with the judge, say what she knew, and sink that story forever. That it was in his own defense. The defense of the straight-haired woman? He couldn't even remember what had happened, not in any real detail. He'd be better off claiming he hadn't been at the El Rey when it happened, no matter what all the witnesses said or the fingerprints on the gravity knife showed. No. As far as he could tell, he was well and rightly fucked. By the time the door opened and the sound of voices at last cut the thick air, Ramon had just about decided that he might as well assault whatever poor pendejo they sent in to talk to him. At least he could do some damage going down, and he might have done it if a human had come into the room. The Enya was like a boulder, its green-black skin the texture of lichen, oyster silver eyes set in pale, fleshy, wet gouges. A tiny pucker of a mouth, lipless and round, marked where its beak lay concealed. The stink of acid and soil filled the room as the thing lumbered into the corner below the surveillance camera and hunkered down, its eyes on Ramon. The constable who'd visited him in the hospital and collared him on the street came in behind it. The man was less pleased with himself now, his mouth set in a professional scowl, his shirt freshly starched and ironed and looking uncomfortable. He carried a black cloth case in one hand and a cigarette in the other. A second man followed him, older and better dressed, the poor fucker's boss. Ramon looked up into the black mechanical eye of the camera and wondered who else was watching him.
Ramon Espejo, the constable said.
Better be, Ramon said, then gestured at the alien with his chin.
The fuck is this?
We're going to ask you some questions, the constable said. You are under warrant from the governor to answer completely and honestly. If you fail to do so, you will be charged and punished. Do you understand what I've just said?
I've been arrested before, Ese. I know how this works.
Good, the constable said. Then we can get straight to business.
He lifted the cloth case to the table. unzipped it, and pulled something out. With a flourish that the cabron must have practiced for an hour, he unrolled something. Dirty rags, colorless where they weren't blood-stained, cut almost to ribbons in places. They might have once been leather or a thick cloth. It was his robe, the one he'd worn tracking through the northern wilderness, the one he'd wrapped around his arm in the final knife fight with his twin, the one Manex aliens had given him. He looked up into the Enya's glistening eyes and saw nothing he could understand. The alien hissed and whistled to itself.
"Señor Espejo," the constable said, "would you please tell us exactly where you got this?"
Chapter 27 They began God only knew how far away, how many hundreds or thousands, or with time dilation, shit, maybe millions of years ago. They came up from some alien sludge under some forgotten star, struggling and fighting, and evolving just like humanity rose from small, unlikely mammals dodging the dinosaurs. And then, the Silver Enya came, killed their children, and scattered them to the stars. Centuries in the darkness, fleeing, blind. One group carried this way, another that. So many lost. And then here, to Sao Paulo, far to the north, where they pulled the mountains up over them like a child with a blanket. Don't let the monsters see me. So long, and so far, and then to have everything rest on some selfish fuck more than half in trouble with the law. Ramon almost felt sorry for them. I will kill you all, Ramon had thought back on that first day, the Sahel newly dug into his flesh. Somehow, I will cut this thing out of my throat, and then I will come back and kill you all. And now, here was his chance. He scratched his arm, even though it didn't itch. Can I have a cigarette? He asked. Why don't you answer my question first? The constable said, his jaw tense. He wasn't going to gain anything by lying. Manek and the aliens had used him, had created him as a tool for their own selfish purposes. Turning them over to the Enya would settle his score with them and make him a hero in the governor's eyes all at the same time. He had every reason to tell them everything, just the way he had every reason to keep to himself in the El Rey. But on the other side of the balance were the key, the young, killed for no reason that Ramon or Manek could fathom. That, and the fact he didn't like the idea of dancing to some pinche alien's tune, no matter if it was Manek or the Enya.
Maybe you could tell me, Ramon said, what the fuck business it is of yours.
The constable's boss glanced at the Enya, and then the surveillance camera, and back. Just a flicker, like a poker player's tell.
We'd like to know, the constable said. The governor wants to know about my fucking bathrobe, Ramon said. He gonna have you sniff my panties, too?
Fuck off. The Enya spoke. Its voice was high, and piping, and awkward. A being speaking a language not merely foreign to it, but nearly unthinkable.
Why do you refuse?
Ramon gestured to the constable with his chin.
I don't like this motherfucker,
Ramon said. The Enya considered this, its long tongue flickering out to cover its body in saliva. The constable flushed nearly purple with rage, but said nothing. The alien was running the show now, the power shifting visibly. Ramon tried to keep his body relaxed while his thoughts darted and spun. Part of his mind was bright with panic, another part defiant and amused. It was like being in a fight. He enjoyed it.
You,
the Enya said.
The one called Paul.
The constable took on an attitude of respect, just short of clicking his heels. Ramon shook his head in disgust.
You are removed. Leave. Do not return.
The constable blinked, his mouth gaping for a moment, then audibly closing. He looked at his supervisor, who shrugged and nodded to the door. The constable, Paul, walked out of the interrogation room, stiff as a man with a broom up his ass. Ramon lifted a finger to the remaining human.
Hey, ese, he said. I get that cigarette now.
The supervisor was an older man, and his anger had room for amusement at the corners of his eyes. He took a cheap, self-lighting cigarette from his pocket, struck it on the floor, and rolled it, burning, across the table to Ramon. It smelled like old cardboard and tasted like somebody's ass. Ramon sucked the smoke in deep and let it float out as he spoke.
It's my bathrobe, Ramon said, pointing with his left hand. Had it for years. There was this accident with my van. I was sleeping. That's all I got out in. Fucking pain not having shoes, too. I still got blisters.
Where did it come from?
The Enya fluted. By now, Ramon had come up with his lie. For short notice, he was proud of it.
From you, he said.
In the ensuing silence, the supervisor leaned forward a centimeter. His voice was equal parts warm, avuncular joking and cold steel threat.
Don't push it, hijo.
The Enya shifted back and forth, its eyes rolling slowly. Its tongue, thankfully, had retreated inside its hidden beak. Ramon knew from his time, years before, that when an Enya stopped licking itself, it was pissed off.
I got it on the trip over, Ramon said.
From Earth?
On an Enya ship. There were a couple of you people wanted to learn how to play poker. We had a game going, so we let them in on it. They sucked. One time, I was drunk. I let this one big pendejo put this fucking bathrobe in instead of whiskey. He said it was a battle souvenir or some such shit. I didn't catch it all. Anyway, he loses fours and sevens to my three queens, and I got me a bathrobe. It was bigger then. I had to make him cut it down to fit me, but it held up pretty good until now. He paused to take another drag. So, you want to tell me what's so important about it? A stench like rotting eggs and boiling turnips filled the room, intense enough to make his eyes water.
This one will be isolated, the Enya said.
Its eyes were still on Ramon, but it was clear enough that it was speaking to the supervisor.
There will be no communication.
We'll see to that, sir, the supervisor said. The Enya turned, and Ramon could see the supervisor brace himself as the alien's tongue emerged and licked the man in farewell. He took it pretty well, Ramon thought. Some trace of Ramon's amusement must have shown through, though. When the Enya lumbered out of the room, the supervisor raised an eyebrow and smiled mirthlessly. Ramon shrugged and finished his cigarette. He had a feeling it would be his last for some time. Two uniformed cops came in to escort him to his new quarters. The cells under the station house were also not entirely new to Ramon, but this was the first time he'd walked down the gray concrete hallways sober. He caught sight of the supervisor still wiping his neck with a bandana and talking to a tall, intense man whom it took Ramon a moment to recognize as the governor. A third person glanced up as Ramon stepped out of sight. A woman with dark, straight hair. Ramon was sorry as he descended the stairs that he hadn't gotten a chance to wave at her. He hadn't seen her since the night at the El Rey. Down in the cells, the constable was waiting. Ramon could feel the anger coming off the man like heat. His gut went tight, his mouth dry. Ramon's guards stopped him, and the constable stalked forward like a hunting cat. I know you're lying, the constable said. You think you can fool them with some bullshit story about your van going missing? I can smell the shit coming off of you. So what the fuck do you think I'm hiding?
Ramon said. You think it's all part of some big pinche plan? I go out, lose everything I own, almost die, and it's all about a bathrobe? What have you been huffing, Ese?
The constable stepped closer, gaze locked on Ramon. His breath felt unpleasantly warm on Ramon's face. It smelled of peppers and tequila. He was 5 or 6 centimeters taller than Ramon, and drew himself up to make the fact clear. Ramon had to fight the instinct to step back, away from the big man's anger.
I don't know what you're hiding, the cop said. I don't know why those fucking rocklickers care.
But I do know Johnny Joe Cardenas wasn't the one who killed that ambassador. So how about you tell me what's really going on here?
Don't have a clue, man. So how about you get out of my way?
Something half-sneer, half-smile twisted the constable's mouth, but he stepped aside. Nodding to one of the guards, he said, "Put him in 12. The guard nodded as he pushed Ramon forward. It was like going into a heavy weather shelter, reinforced concrete and unpainted composite doors and hinges. Ramon let himself be steered to an intersection of corridors and then down a short hallway. The air was thick and stale. In one of the cells, some poor bastard was crying loud enough for the sound to carry. Ramon tried to shrug it all off, but tension in his gut was cinching tighter and tighter. How long would they hold him here? Who would come to his defense? He didn't have anyone. The door to cell 12 swung open silently, and Ramon stepped in. It was a small room, but not tiny. 4 bunks stood on each sidewall, an open hole in the middle of the room serving as the toilet. The light was white LED, recessed behind security glass in the ceiling. Someone had scored words into the glass, but it was too bright for Ramon to read it. The door shut, the magnetic bolt closing with a deep clank. A man in one of the lower bunks rolled over to look at him. He was huge, broad across the shoulders, his scalp covered by cheap tattoos, and a thin stubble of black hair going gray at the temples. His eyes were like a dog's. Ramon's balls tried to crawl up into his belly.
"Hey, Johnny Joe," Ramon said.
They took him out before Johnny Joe could quite manage to kill him, half carrying him to another cell. Ramon lay on the concrete floor, feeling himself breathe. His mouth tasted of blood. His ribs ached, and his left eye wouldn't open. He thought a couple of his teeth were loose. The LED in this cell was off, so it was a lot like being in a grave, or the alien's tank. He chuckled at the idea, and then at the arcing pain that came from chuckling. There was another thing that laughter could be. Despair. Pain. To have come so far, to have endured so much, just to wind up rotting in a cell under the station house of the governor's constabulary. And for who? The aliens who'd humiliated and used him. He didn't owe them shit. Manek and all the motherfuckers like it. Ramon owed them nothing. He didn't remember now why he thought he did. The key, slaughtered by the Enya. They weren't human babies. They didn't matter. If he just told them, he could go. He could find Liana. Maybe send old Martin Casals a message saying how sorry he was and that he understood why Martin had tried to kill him. He could sit beside the river and listen to the water slap the stones of the quay. He could get a van again and go out where there were no people or aliens or jails. All he had to do was tell them. He levered himself up to his elbows.
"I'll tell," he croaked. "Come on, you pendejos. You want to know what's out there? I'll fucking tell you. I'll fucking tell. Just let me go."
No one heard him. The door didn't open.
"Just let me go."
He fell into an exhausted sleep there on the floor, and dreamed that his twin was in the cell with him, smoking a cigarette and bragging about sexual conquests Ramon didn't remember. He tried to yell to the other man that they were in danger, that he had to get away, before recalling that the man was dead. His twin, who had also become Manek and Palenque, had launched into a lascivious description of fucking the European's companion when Ramon managed to break in, protesting in thought more than words that it had never happened. "How do you know?" his twin asked. "You weren't there. Who the fuck are you?" "I'm Ramon Espejo," Ramon shouted, waking himself with the words. In the darkness, the prison floor harder than mere stone under his back, Ramon shook his head until the last tendrils of nightmare were gone. He forced himself to sit up and take stock of his injuries. They were, he decided, more painful than dangerous. Disgust washed over him, for his weakness, for his willingness to help the police even after they'd done this to him. Manek and the aliens had collared him like a dog, but they hadn't locked him in with a psychopath just for fun. It took a human to do that. "I'll kill you fuckers," he said to an imagined constable, his supervisor, the governor. "Somehow, I will get free of this, and I will kill each one of you sorry pendejos." Even he wasn't convinced. When the door swung open, he realized he'd fallen asleep again. The supervisor walked in, light from the hall making a halo around him. As Ramon's eyes adjusted to the brightness, he saw resignation and amusement on the man's face.
"You don't look so good, Señor Espejo."
"Yeah, well, you go 10 rounds with Johnny Joe Cardenas. See how you do." The LED in the ceiling flickered on as the door closed, leaving the two of them alone.
"I'd do fine," the supervisor said. "Hung him this morning."
"You want a cigarette?"
"Nah," Ramon said. "I'm quitting."
Then, a moment later, held out his hand. The supervisor squatted beside Ramon, struck a cigarette against the floor, and handed it over.
"Got some food coming, too," the man said. "And I'm sorry about Paul. He doesn't do so good when someone embarrasses him.
The Enya taking your side with the governor watching?"
"Well, he overreacted."
"That's what you call this, eh?" The supervisor shrugged, like a man who'd spent too many years looking at the world.
"Got to call it something," he said. "They're going to take your story apart. I'm just saying, Ramon, it's going to happen.
Why would I lie about my van getting..." "No one gives a shit about your van. The Enya have been going crazy about this robe. It's some kind of alien artifact."
"That's what I fucking said it was."
The supervisor let that pass. "If there's something you're hiding, we're going to find out. The governor's not going to watch out for you. He knows you killed the European ambassador, even if he doesn't want to admit it. The cops... well, we can't back you if the governor doesn't. The Enya are hot about this thing, whatever the fuck it is. They'll want us to turn you over to them." Ramon sucked the smoke deep into his lungs. When he exhaled, he could see where a little draft from the hallway caught the air and spun it. The smoke made the flow visible.
"You're negotiating for them?"
"I'm saying it's going to be better if you tell them what they want to know. They're the ones who've got all the power." Ramon rested his head on his knees. A memory assaulted him. The first flashback of its kind in many days, the last, it turned out, he would ever have. It began with laughter. A woman's laughter, fighting its way past the clink and clatter of the pachinko machine. Ramon was in the El Rey. The memory was clear now. The reek of the smoke, the smooth blackness of the bar. He remembered the glass in his hand, the way it clinked when he plunked it with his fingernail. The way the back mirror looked gray from the low lights and the accumulated film of old cigarettes. Music played, but softly. No one had paid to have the speakers turned up loud enough to dance to.
"It's about power," the European said.
His voice was too loud. He was drunk,
but not as drunk as he pretended. His accent was broad and nasal.
You know what I mean? Not like violence. Not physical violence.
The woman beside him glanced around the bar. There were maybe 20 people in the place, and they could all hear the conversation she and her European companion were having. She caught Ramon's eyes reflected in the mirror for a fraction of a second, then looked away and laughed. She neither agreed with the European nor disagreed. He went on as if she had spoken. That her opinion didn't matter proved his point.
I mean, take you, he said,
his other hand on her arm as if he was pointing it out to her.
You came to me because you had to.
No.
No, don't disagree. It's okay. I'm a man of the world, right? I understand. I'm the traveling big shot, and your boss wants to make sure I'm happy. That gives me power, you see? You came out to this bar with me, didn't you?
The woman said something, her voice too low to hear, her mouth in a tight smile. It didn't work.
No, seriously, the man said. What would you do if I told you to come back to my room with me right now and fuck me? I mean, are you really in a position to say no? You could, right? You could say you didn't want to, but then I'd have you fired, just like that.
He snapped his fingers and grinned coldly. Ramon sipped his drink. The whiskey seemed watery, but he'd been listening to the European talk for a while now, and the ice in the glass had melted down to ovals like little fingernails.
Or not even my room, the European said. The alley, out back. I could take you out there and tell you to take off that little dress and spread your legs. And seriously, what could you do about it? Just hypothetically, you know? I'm just saying, what if? That's what I mean about power. I have power over you. It's not because I'm a good person and you're a bad one. It's not about morality at all.
His hand dropped from her arm. From where he sat, Ramon guessed that it had found its way to her thigh, or maybe even beyond. She was sitting very still now, still smiling, but the smile was brittle. The pachinko machine had gone quiet. No one else in the bar was talking, but the European didn't take notice, or maybe he did, and this was the point, that everyone should hear and know. Ramon met Mikel Ibrahim's eyes and tapped the rim of his glass. The barkeeper didn't speak, only poured more liquor in.
Power is what it's all about.
His voice was lower now. There was a bass roll in the words. The woman laughed and pushed back her hair, a nervous gesture.
You understand what I'm saying to you?
I do, she said.
Her voice was higher.
I really do, but I think it's time that I...
Don't get up,
the European said. He wasn't asking.
This is shit, someone whispered.
Ramon drank his whiskey. It was his fourth, maybe his fifth. Mikhail had his credit information. If he'd been out of money, Mikhail would have kicked him out. Ramon placed the empty glass on the bar and deliberately put both hands, palm down, and stared at them. If he was too drunk, they wouldn't seem like his own. They seemed like his own. Mostly. He was sober enough. He looked forward and saw himself in the haze of the mirror. He watched himself smile a little. The woman laughed. There was no mirth in the sound. There was fear.
I want you to say that you understand, the European said, his voice low. And then I want you to come with me and show me how much you agree with me.
Hey, pendejo, Ramon said. You want power? How about you come outside and I'll kick your pinche ass?
The European looked over, surprised. There was a moment of utter silence, and then the bar was shouting, on its feet, cheering. Ramon saw the moment of fear in the European's eyes, the rage that followed. Ramon adjusted the knife in his sleeve,
and grinned.
"What have you got to smile about, Iho?" the supervisor said.
"I was just thinking about something," Ramon said.
There was a long pause. The supervisor hunched over like they were both prisoners in the same cell.
"You're going to change your story?" he asked.
Ramon took a long draw on his cigarette and sighed slowly, releasing a long, gray plume of smoke. A half-dozen smart-ass comments came to mind, things he could say to show them he wasn't scared of them or of the aliens for whom they'd made themselves into hunting dogs. In the end, he said simply, "No."
"Your call," the supervisor said.
"I still get the food."
"Sure. And do yourself a favor. Reconsider. And do it fast. Paul's got an idea how he's going to show the Enya you're full of shit. And if they ask to take you back to their ship, you're gone. And then you're doomed."
"Thanks for the warning," Ramon said.
"De nada," the supervisor said, making it clear by his tone that it really was nothing to him, one way or the other.
Chapter 28 Time was a strange thing in the cell. The darkness had left him feeling discarded and forgotten. Now that the LED was on, Ramon had the sense of being scrutinized. The light was unforgiving. It made every squalid stain and scratch and chip in the cell perfectly clear. Ramon considered his wounds and came to the conclusion that while he would ache and piss blood for days, he wouldn't be the last man Johnny Joe Cardenas had killed. He would recover, if the Enya let him. There were stories, all officially denied, about what happened to men who transgressed against the crews of the transport ships. Ramon had heard his share and believed them, or not, depending on who told them and when and where. Once he'd reached the colony, they had the same status as ghost stories. They were pleasantly frightening and grotesque, but nothing to spend time thinking about. Now, though, he wondered, if they took him, would he hold out? There wasn't any advantage to him in keeping my next secret if the Enya would wrench it out of him anyway. The slaughter that followed would be the same whether Ramon offered up the information or had it taken from him. Except, of course, to Ramon. On the other hand, he was a tough son of a bitch. So maybe he could stand it, even if they tried to break him. No way to know without trying. Instead of obsessing about it, Ramon attempted to pinpoint the moment when he'd stopped thinking of Manek and the aliens beneath the mountains as his enemies. It had to have happened. He had dedicated himself to killing them for the indignities they'd heaped upon him, and now, here he was, wondering if he would be strong enough to die to protect them if the need arose. It wasn't a small change of heart, and yet he couldn't say when it had happened, or why it felt so much like the moment he'd spoken up for the woman in the bar, or why the prospect of his own torture and death didn't fill him with some greater dread. But there had been no promise of survival with the European either. He could have died in that alley as easily as he had killed. The result wasn't the point. It was all about being the kind of man who would do the sort of thing he was doing. It was a reason to be. A reason to die a good death, if that's what it meant. And maybe he had a thing for lost causes, like that guy in the telenovela. And then there were also long stretches when Ramon knew that if anyone had asked at that particular moment, he'd have told them anything, everything, just as long as they'd let him go. As the hours passed, he came to fix my next chances at maybe 60-40 against, depending on what part of its cycle of heroism and cowardice his mind was in when they came, and whether they pissed him off enough that he'd be willing to sacrifice himself out of spite. When the door opened and the guards stepped in, the supervisor was with them. He'd changed his suit, so Ramon figured at least a day had passed since he'd been hauled into the cell. That seemed plausible. Once he was shackled, the guards marched him, one before, two behind, and all of them with electric batons out and charged,
to a small meeting chamber. It was nicely appointed, none of the slaughterhouse feel that the rest of the station maintained. The Enyer from before, or else one enough like it to fool Ramon, stood against one wall, its slick tongue darting contentedly over its body. The governor was there, and, to Ramon's surprise, the woman from the bar. The supervisor had the guards lead Ramon to a chair bolted to the floor and chain him to it. The governor looked at him with a mixture of disgust and shrewd evaluation. The woman glanced at him once, her expression profoundly bored, and turned back to her data pad. "This is all your fucking fault." He projected the thought toward the woman. "If you had stood up for yourself, instead of counting on us to do your fighting for you, I wouldn't be in this fucked-up situation."
"Okay," the governor said, sounding annoyed. "Can we get this over with?"
"They're just getting her into the interrogation room now, sir," the supervisor said.
"Who?"
Ramon asked. "What the fuck's going on?"
"What I told you, hijo," the supervisor said. "End of the line."
A wall screen popped once and then hummed to life. The hellish little interrogation room came into being, canted at a disturbing angle. He could see the back of the constable's head and the place where the man was just starting to bald. Across from him, Elena was looking annoyed and fidgeting with a cigarette. Ramon coughed.
Hey, wait! No fucking way! No way! I just broke it off with her! She's fucking loca! You can't believe a thing she says!"
The governor shot a glance at the supervisor. The Enya's wet oyster eyes seemed to flicker as it considered Ramon. The woman pretended she hadn't heard him.
"Señor Espejo," the supervisor said. "Extradition hearing needs the governor, a representative of the foreign power, a representative of the police, and the accused. That's you. Doesn't say a goddamn thing about the accused getting to talk. With all due respect for your rights as a citizen, this is your chance to shut the fuck up before I gag you. Okay?"
On the screen, the constable and Elena were going through the motions, stating her name and address, whether she knew Ramon Espejo.
"But she's a liar,"
Ramon said, embarrassed to hear the whine in his voice.
"I known that asswipe for 7 years, Elena said from the screen. "Whenever he comes to town, he stays with me. Eats my food, leaves his crap on my floor. I even washed his pinche clothes. You believe that? I got a good job, and I'm spending my time off shift making sure that slack-ass cabron has clean socks."
"So would you call your relationship with Señor Espejo an intimate one?"
Elena glanced at the constable, then down at the floor, shrugging.
"I guess," she said. "I mean, yeah, we were intimate."
"In your time with Señor Espejo, 7 years, you said? You washed his laundry often?"
"Sure," Elena said.
"She never," Ramon began.
The supervisor shook his head once, left, right.
"Stop,"
with a sense of threat that made Ramon go quiet.
"And in that time," the constable said, "did you ever come across this garment?"
With a flourish, he produced the robe. Ramon looked over at the Enya. Its gaze was on the screen, its tongue moving restlessly, darting in and out of its mouth, the fringe of chartreuse cilia that lined its body squirming like worms.
"I've got to tell them," Ramon thought. "For fuck's sake, I've got to tell them now before they give me to that thing."
Second-hand visions danced through his mind. The silver Enya on their path of slaughter. What methods would they devise to wring information from a human? All he had to do was talk, say a few words, and condemn my next people to death. How fucking hard could that be?
"That rag? All the time," Elena said. "Leaves it on the floor of the fucking bathroom whenever he takes a shower. And you know why? Because he thinks I'm his goddamn maid. Pendejo. I'll tell you what, I'm way better off without him. Kicking his ass out was the best thing I ever did."
Ramon's panic had deafened him.
so it took a moment before the meaning of her words came to him. He turned to the screen, his jaw slack. In the interrogation room, silence stretched. The constable's mouth moved as if he were speaking, but no words escaped. Elena scratched herself indelicately. Ramon's head spun. It was bullshit. Elena couldn't have seen this robe. Not even after he'd come back from the hospital. She was lying, and lying in just the right way to save his sorry ass. He couldn't understand it.
"Are you sure of that?" the constable asked. His voice sounded a little strangled. "Please take a very close look at this. You're sure you've seen this particular piece of clothing?"
"Yeah," Elena said.
"But in your deposition, you said that Señor Espejo doesn't own a robe."
"That's not a robe," Elena said.
"Robe is like down to your ankles long. That would only go to just under his knee. It's more like a smock."
"And this smock," the constable said, then trailed off. Ramon almost felt sorry for the little shit. What was there left for him to say?
"He's had it since I met him," Elena said. "I kept telling him to throw the fucking shabby thing out, but did he ever listen to me?"
"Never. Never once about anything, pinche motherfucker."
"Ah,"
the constable said, and then, hopelessly,
"You're sure?"
"Do I look stupid?" Elena asked, frowning. A sense of unreality washed over him. Someone had gotten to her. Someone had gotten to Elena between the time she gave her deposition and now, and coached her on how to pull Ramon's sorry balls out of the fire. He wondered how much it had cost. Knowing Elena, probably a fair amount. He didn't let himself laugh, but the relief was like taking a drink of the best whiskey he'd ever had. Better, maybe. Standing beside the governor, the straight-haired woman looked over at him, her face empty of any expression. The problem with aliens, Ramon realized, was that they could never truly understand all the subtle ways that humans could communicate with humans. 100 years of talking, and Ramon would never have been able to explain to anyone else how exactly the woman raising her chin a few millimeters meant, "You're welcome," and "Thank you," and "We're even," all at the same time. Ramon imagined the European soul trapped somewhere in hell, keening his anger as Ramon escaped. On screen, the constable limped through a few more pointless questions and then closed the interrogation. The governor tapped at his data pad once, and the wall screen image faded. Ramon rubbed his hand against his thigh, trying to hide his elation by feigning impatience and rage.
"So you still want to gag me, pendejo?" Ramon asked. "I don't mean to be, you know, unreasonable or anything, but now that you fuckers have locked me up, kicked the shit out of me, and tried to hand me over to that great glob of snot over there, can someone unlock these fucking shackles so I can go talk to a lawyer about how much I can sue you for?"
"His account is consistent,"
the Enya piped.
"He is of no interest."
Never in his life had Ramon been so thoroughly pleased to be of no interest. The governor, his assistant, and the Enya all left while Ramon was being processed out. The supervisor went through the forms and procedures with a bored efficiency. Only his continued presence indicated that he wanted to be sure nothing else about all this went wrong. Within an hour, Ramon stepped onto the street, worse for wear, but grinning all the same. He paused to spit on the ground at the base of the station house stairs, then strode out into the city, making it almost half a block before he realized that he had nowhere to go. He had been on his way to find Liana and create some kind of new life for himself. He was maybe 2 hours' walk from there now, still with the wristband identification they used when he was in custody, bruised and beaten from his time with Johnny Joe, and not feeling up to a long walk anyway. He kept moving until he found a public square, a sad little plot of dirt in the shadow of an administrative complex. He sat on a bench, just for a few minutes, though. He didn't want the police to hassle him, and he figured he looked like a bum. A bum, without a place of his own, without a job. He had nothing, only a half-baked plan to rebuild himself, and a secret he couldn't tell anyone. High above, the Enya ships flickered, their forms dimmed by the haze of smoke that squatted over the city. The sun would set soon, and the few stars that could struggle against the city lights would come out. Ramon shoved his hands in his pockets. Liana seemed like a dream now, an idea he'd had when he was drunk, only to find it nonsense when sobriety returned. He tried to imagine what he would say to her, how he would explain that the beaten-up, penniless prospector without a van or even a place to sleep was someone who had worth. Never mind that he'd just gotten out of the station house jail and probably smelled like it. Never mind that he'd just become the new Johnny Joe, first on the list of usual suspects to be rounded up the next time the governor needed someone to take the fall for some inconveniently unsolvable crime. He knew what Liana would see when she looked at him. She'd see Ramon Espejo. It was still twilight when he reached the butcher's shop. It had been closed for hours, metal bars hugging the doors and windows. He took the side stairs up. There were lights on in Elena's apartment. He stood in the gloom at the top of the stairs for a long time. There were cats in the alley, another species imported from Earth. Lizards skittered up the wall and took wing. The scent of old blood rotting in the alley mixed with the wood smoke and van exhaust. The odor of Diego Town was acrid and familiar. The tension in his shoulders and gut was also familiar. Up in the night sky, Big Girl was peeking out from behind the high clouds, the boom and blare of distant music. He knocked. When she opened the door, he could see the question in her eyes. There were any number of reasons he might have come, to say thank you, to get some of the shit he'd forgotten and leave again, to stay. Each one had a different greeting to match it, and she wasn't sure which to use. He wasn't either. "Hey," he said. "You look like shit," she said. "The cops do that? Get their fucking hands dirty." "No, they had a guy do it for them." Elena crossed her arms over her breasts. She hadn't stood aside. Afraid, he guessed, that he wouldn't accept the invitation. "You give as good as you got," she asked. "He's dead," Ramon said. "I didn't kill him, so I'm not in trouble or any shit like that. But he was there because of me, and they killed him. I figure that means I won." "Tough cabron," Elena said, half mocking, but only half. "Dangerous to cross." An orbital shuttle throbbed up into the night. Ramon smiled. It hurt a little around his eye. Elena looked down, smiled shyly at his knees, and stepped back. He went inside, closing the door behind him. She'd made rice gumbo. It was the kind of dish she could tell herself she made so she could eat the leftovers through the week, or it could be meant to feed too. Ramon sat at the table and let her serve him a bowl. "You were good," he said. "With the cops, I mean. That thing about how it's a smock." "You like that?" Elena asked. "That was my idea." "It was good," Ramon said. "Only thing was, with the camera like that, I couldn't see his face." Elena grinned, made a bowl for herself, and sat down. The atmosphere surrounding them seemed as fragile as blown glass. Ramon cleared his throat, but didn't have any words to follow up with, so he took a mouthful of gumbo. It wasn't very good. "That rich lady," Elena said, "the one who came and talked to me, she was the one at the El Rey." "Yeah," Ramon said, "that was her."
"She seemed okay."
"I don't know. I never talked to her."
Elena's eyes narrowed. Her lips thinned.
Ramon felt the distrust emanating from her like heat. He shook his head. "No shit," he said. "She never said a fucking word to me. I only ever heard her name because one of the cops said it." "You got in a knife fight with a guy over some woman you never even talked to?" Elena's voice was incredulous, but not angry. "Well, he didn't know it was a knife fight," Ramon said. "You're fucking crazy," she said. Ramon laughed. Elena laughed with him. The fragile moment passed. The fight they'd had was just another fight now. One of a thousand before, and a thousand still to come, too insignificant to remember. He reached out and took her hand. "I'm glad you came back," she said. "I fit here," he said. "I thought for a while I was someone else, but this is where I am, you know? To be Ramon and not Ramon is Aubrey." "What's that mean?" "Damned if I know," Ramon said through a grin. "It's just something a friend of mine used to say." Chapter 29. It was a crisp, clear day in October. The van's lift tubes whined, and one of the rear pair lost power sometimes. If Ramon didn't keep an eye on it, he'd wind up flying in a long, slow circle, the terreno cimarron below him going on until his fuel cells ran down. It was especially a pain in the ass because the winter night fell early this far north, and he would have liked to put the van on autopilot and get a little sleep. Instead, he stayed humped over the bullshit instrument panel running diagnostics and telling himself that his days of fifth-rate rented vans were going to end. Just 4 or 5 good trips in a row, and after this trip, 4 or 5 good runs should be easy. The Enya had remained parked above Sao Paulo for 2 months, shuttles rising into the sky and dropping back down, sometimes as often as a dozen times a day. As the weeks went by, Ramon had found it harder and harder to stay in the city. Once his latest set of wounds had more or less healed, the impulse to get out of the city and into the wild returned. His patience with the people around him grew shorter and shorter, and to make things worse, he didn't dare get drunk. The police were making it quite clear that they had their eyes on Ramon. He couldn't go to the store without seeing someone in the uniform lurking nearby. On the few occasions he did go into a bar, a constable always seemed to materialize a few minutes later. Twice he got pulled in for questioning over some petty crime he'd had nothing to do with. Both times he'd had alibis that even the police couldn't deny. But it was clear enough. They wanted him out, and he wanted to oblige them. He would have, if he had any money. Instead, he stayed at home and drank a little of Elena's whiskey. When he got a little buzzed, he'd get on her link and snoop through the records and boards for answers to idle questions. It was how he learned that Martin Casaus had died 3 years before in a wreck, that Liana was married and had a kid. It was where he discovered that the European's name had been Dorian Andres, and that the trade agreements he'd been working to broker, agreements that wouldn't be signed in this generation or the next, were being sent back to Europa in hopes that the process wouldn't have to be postponed for another 100 or 1,000 years, followed up by the children of children whose parents hadn't yet been born. Space was too large for these things to mean as much as the politicians wanted them to. And it was where he discovered that the Silverenia were moving on. The Eaters of the Young had finished trading, and they were heading out to the next colony, searching for their prey, though no woman or man on the planet knew that, besides himself. The afternoon they were scheduled to go, there was another big carnival downtown in their honor. But instead of attending, Ramon got a couple beers, crawled up onto the roof of Elena's apartment by himself, and watched the ships go. When the last light of their drives had faded from the deep blue sky, Ramon flipped them off. Fucking pendejos. Elena kicked him out about the time of the first snow. But even that was strange. The way it used to be, he would have done something. She would have got pissed, and they'd have ended throwing punches and plates. Instead, one morning, Elena looked at him, shook her head,
and told him it was time for him to go before he did something stupid. It had been like that ever since she'd saved his ass with the police. They still fought. They still yelled. But when it was something important, it was just a statement. The beans are cold. That shirt's not clean. It's time for you to go before you do something stupid. The plan Ramon had been working on was as close to ready as it was ever going to be, and the call of the open sky was getting louder in his heart every day. She was right. He needed to get out for a while. And then, when the city and the people and the lingering threat of the Enya were out of his system, he would need to come back. Griego had been a hard ass about the whole thing, pressing Ramon about why he didn't have better insurance on his last van, pointing out that Ramon was asking him to trust equipment to a crazy fuck who'd gone out last time with a perfectly good machine and come back naked and three-quarters dead with nothing to show for it. The negotiation had gone on over cans of Griego's beer until they were both drunk off their asses and singing old songs. In the morning, they'd both remembered they'd made an agreement, but the contract they'd drawn up was half gibberish. It had their signatures on it, though, so Griego had agreed to loan Ramon a van on the understanding that the rental fee would be half of any income that resulted from the run, plus depreciation on the van. He was fucking Ramon over, but Ramon didn't care. He was making shit off this run anyway. This was just the first part of the plan. Getting rich came later. The moons were both out. Big girl high in the sky, while little girl was just starting to peek over the horizon. Their cool blue light allowed glimpses of the terrain below. The Oceano Teatrico was black as coffee in the darkness. But Ramon knew that the daylight, when it came, would reveal water a deep, lush green. Winter was growing time in the ocean, just the reverse of the land, something to do with oxygenation levels. But what it meant to him was an endless plain of tiny green waves, the bite of winter air, and the scent of salt and turning tides. He conjured it all now, constructing the world in his mind. His belly had lost that sick feeling since he'd left Diego Town. His mind felt calmer, slower, less like a dog caged in a kennel. It was moments like this that made the difference. The van chimed, and he turned his attention back to the next of the near infinite small manual corrections flying the thing required. In a real van, and not this half-dead lump of tin, he would have gone on to the Sierra Hueso in a single jump, but he knew that if he left the panel and tried to bed down, his distrust of the van would keep him awake anyway. Near midnight, he overflew Fiddler's Jump, aimed the van east to the unlogged forests, and circled until he found a little clearing to set down in. The snow was deep enough that it would have been hard work to get the door open, had he intended to go out. But inside the small box, its heating system online and keeping the air warm, it felt like being wrapped in a good wool blanket on a cold night. He curled up on his cot and fell asleep, wondering what the difference was between blackmail and extortion. The plan, once it had finally coalesced, was a simple one. Manek and its people had been squatting, hidden on this planet since long before the colony had begun. They'd chosen this place to hide their hive. They might even have other hives scattered around the planet. He would offer them the trade, share the information they had about the planet's mineral resources, and once he was making enough money to keep it from seeming weird, he'd put stop claims on the land they inhabited, make sure those sites weren't developed, that no other prospectors blundered upon them. In order for that to work, he'd have to be making a lot of stop claims, so he'd have to be making a lot of money. In fact, he'd have to be one of the richest men in the colony. So it was pretty important for Manek and the others to make sure Ramon got a lot of very rich claims. The trick, of course, was that he had to tell all this to the aliens so that they'd understand what the deal was and what the consequences to them would be if they just killed him on the spot rather than listen. He'd recorded it all. Times, coordinates, descriptions of the aliens and their relationship to the Enya, then encrypted the file and given it to Mikhail Ibrahim to keep in whatever drawer held Ramon's old gravity knife. The man had proven himself capable of keeping a secret. Maybe, when Ramon got rich, he'd hired him as an overseer or something. Regardless, the agreement was that Ramon would come get the data when he was done with this run. If spring came without him, Mikhail would hand it over to the cops. Ramon knew intellectually that trusting the alien's fate to Griego's fifth-rate van was a shitty thing to do. If the lift tubes failed, or the power cell blew, the aliens would suffer the same fate as if they'd killed him. But Ramon hadn't seen any other way to go about it. Plus, if it came down that way, he'd be dead himself and wouldn't care. It was a risk, of course. Maybe a big one. There was no knowing what these bastards would think or do. Stranger than a Norte Americano, or even the Japanese. If he couldn't make them understand about the insurance policy he'd left behind, they'd probably kill him. Hell, maybe they'd kill him anyway, even if they did understand. Who could know? But life was a risk. That was how you knew you were living. The morning came late that far north, and Ramon had to cycle through startup 3 times before the lift tubes all de-iced the way they were supposed to. It was just shy of noon before he took to the sky again, skimming over the snow-laden treetops, watching the ice clouds high over the mountains and humming to himself. Off to the west was the thin, silver-white band that was the Rio Embudo, where he'd almost died. Somewhere in that flow, eaten by fish, his bones washed out to sea, the other Ramon had by now become part of the world in a way that could never be undone. Ramon touched his brow in a sign of respect for the dead. "Better you than me, cabron," he said again. He had been afraid that the change of seasons would have made the discontinuity in the land's face hard to find. He'd budgeted 3 days to poke through the mountains, but he didn't need them. He put the van down in the same upland meadow where he'd landed so long ago, in another life, wrapped himself in warm, waterproof clothes, and took up his new field kit. It took him less than an hour to divine the shape of the stone beneath the snow, to recognize where exactly he was and where he wanted to go. As he trudged through the snow, he pulled the caver's spike from his pack. It was as long as his forearm, with a tempered, sharp point and a small blasting cap on the end. Ramon had also brought coring charges, but he didn't want to take down the whole rock face again if he didn't have to. When he reached the cliff, he dusted it with his hands, looking for a likely spot, paused to judge the overhanging snow. Dying in an avalanche would be a stupid way to go at this point, and set the caver's spike. It fired off with a sharp, dry report. White-feathered lace crows unfolded themselves awkwardly from the trees, squawking in complaint, and tenfin birds flew up along the slope, crying like grieving women. Hopefully, the tip of the spike had driven into the silvery metal of the hive. Ramon remembered what he'd felt like, walking up to that imperfect mirror, seeing his own foggy reflection stumbling toward him out of it. For a long time, nothing happened. Ramon began to wonder if he'd gotten the wrong place, or if the spike hadn't gone in far enough, or if the aliens had abandoned the hive, fleeing to some even more distant corner of the world, or maybe burrowing deeper into it. That would have been just his luck. What if they'd decided that his own escape had constituted Gesù after all, and all committed suicide? What if inside the mountain there was nothing but the dead? But as he began to turn back to the van to get the coring charges, to try again, the snow far above him and off to the left shifted. Great sheets of it crumbled and fell as the stone beneath it irised open. A hole appeared, blacker from being set in the white of winter, and then, with a high-pitched whine like a centrifuge spinning up, a Eunaea emerged, its pale, ropey sides shining the yellow of old ivory. The box hovered for a moment, as if considering him.
Ramon waved his arms, trying to catch the thing's attention, and also show that he wasn't afraid of it. He'd come there intentionally. The alien craft hovered, shifted one way and then another, as if trying to make sense of him. Ramon, reassured by the alien's hesitation, lit a cigarette and grinned into the cold wind. The slats of the Unea's side thinned, and Ramon saw the alien form within. It was perhaps 2 meters tall, its skin yellowish with a swirling pattern of black and silver that was scarred in places from old wounds. One of the hot orange eyes had darkened permanently. Ramon smiled at his old friend and captor.
"Hey, monster!"
he shouted, his hands cupped around his mouth.
"Come on down! Another monster wants to talk to you."
This recording was produced by Steve Feldberg, directed by Charles McCrory and Ian Hackney. It was recorded at the studios of Audible Inc. and edited by Joe Gummery. Music by Michael Whalen. We hope you enjoyed this program from Harper Audio. For more information about the broad range of titles from Harper Audio, Harper Children's Audio, and Cadman, please visit our website at www.harperaudio.com. You can also call 1-800-331-3761. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.